Hello, this is Trevor with the MTA podcast, but you already knew that. It's October 2016. This is our Halloween special, Marathon Horror Stories. That's right. And if you found this episode, it means you are a smart person and a close follower of MTA. Since we didn't let this episode go in our regular feed, that means you found it through one of our other channels, like our newsletter or our Facebook page. So thanks for paying attention, and we hope you enjoy. I'm going to read some short stories here from real runners who have a marathon horror story to share. We actually solicited these last year and just kind of sat on them, didn't do anything with them at that time, but the time has come. Angie's original post in Facebook says, "The funny thing about marathons is that you can never completely predict what will happen. We often talk about the joys of running marathons, but currently we've been thinking about a podcast called Marathon Horror Stories. If you had a marathon or half go wrong, we'd love to hear about it." You can either post your story below or email it to us. Just let us know if you want your real name used. And it looks like no one had any problems with using their real names. So these are real stories by real runners in our community. And these are their real names. Let's start with Laura D. She says, "Oh man, I have two horror stories. Both include barfing. But one includes a killer cold, a stay at a hotel, and a romance novel convention. And the great idea to take double the cold medicine at the start line and try to mix in a ton of cough drops and Gatorade. Thar she blows at the finish line in front of so many people." Well, thank you, Laura, for getting us started on that inspiring note of throwing up at the finish line. That would be bad. This one comes from Lalo Pino. "I had a perfect training schedule for the 2012 Chicago Marathon. I didn't miss a training run, and I was breaking all kinds of PRs. A week before the Chicago Marathon, I was running with the group and trying to keep up. I had a little pain in my foot, and two people told me it was probably a broken bone. I thought it was impossible since I was still able to walk. I got to the marathon an hour and a half too early and waited outside in the Chicago cold. I couldn't feel my feet or hands. I ran the marathon, and at mile 8, I heard a pop. Turns out, I broke my foot twice, before and during the marathon. But I finished. Along with my medal, I got a nice pair of crutches and a boot. Lesson learned." Well, Lilo, you keep on rocking in the free world, my friend. Thanks for sharing your horror story. And this next one comes from Kristen McManus. "This was my 8th marathon and 6th time running Chicago. It was an unseasonably warm and windy day. And like another person said, I overloaded on Gatorade and goo. By mile 14, I was nauseous and lightheaded. And at mile 19, I took a very sick, unsteady walk into the medical tent where my race ended. It was my first DNF. And while I swore I would never run another marathon, by the time I was on the runner transport, I knew it wasn't the end of the road, but a big wake-up call to get that ever-elusive nutrition piece in order." You know, I think a lot of horror stories do involve food that does not agree with your stomach, or just the stomach in general. Christian Sturm writes, "Night marathon in Biel, Switzerland. 2 weeks after finishing the Stockholm Marathon in Sweden, I registered for what turned out to be my personal Waterloo. I was overconfident and didn't check the route profile before the race. Big mistake. Not only did my body protest due to the time of day, the race started at 10:30 p.m. and finished around 3 a.m. I completely underestimated the effect of running at night, plus running uphill mostly, constantly. Yes, 60% of the race was uphill. Too much for me. I did finish, but I had to walk for about one-third of the total distance, and I felt really devastated." Well, just remember, Christian, you do have what it takes to run uphill in the dark and change your life. We feel your pain, buddy. This next one is from Cereal Runner. Cereal as in a preferred breakfast food, not as in a person that runs a lot. Anyway, Cereal Runner says, Despite minute-by-minute planning, I arrived at the starting line of the 2013 Philadelphia Marathon with just a minute or two to spare. I had to run to the porta potty during the national anthem and make it to the corral, not mine, as the gun went off. Okay, I'm waiting for the next line to say, the stray bullet from the gun hit me. Okay, but that's not how it goes. Everything seemed better, though, for the first half. So good, in fact. I was running harder and faster than I anticipated. But I couldn't help myself and ended up running with the 3:30 Pacers through mile 11 to 12. At the halfway point, though, my knees started sending me messages that things weren't so positive and I had to slow down. I wish I had only registered for the half, but I had another 13.1 to go. I slowed down significantly over the next few miles and my knee felt like it was locking up. By mile 16 or so, I was almost in tears as my stride slowed to a walk. We also happened to be at the turnaround, and I saw tons of people running past me. And then the walking continued as I couldn't bear the pain from my knee, which later turned out to be a bad case of ITBS. I limped slash jogged in pain over the next handful of miles, wincing with each step. Finally, I finished and ended up not running for a whole month in recovery. And the lesson learned, don't run too fast straight out of the gate. I was really disappointed that there was no mention of breakfast cereal in that whole story, but thank you, Cereal Runner, for sharing the follies of running too fast in the first half of the marathon. Been there, done that. Well, this next one comes from Philip Min. He's a great guy. He says, Park Country Marathon, Bridgeton, Indiana, 2011. A mist-marked country course with an out-and-back at the end that did not have a clear sign or a monitor. I ran 3 extra miles before I backtracked. The guy next to me kept running because he was afraid of being disqualified. After I complained, the race director finally went out and searched for the guy and found him after another hour. It was a hot day in May, and this was the first and last race. Oh, man. Is this good or what, huh? Are we liking this? Are you not entertained? All right, here's one from Karen Glick, longtime listener. The Ottawa Fall Colors Marathon. I trained so hard and wanted a good time. Well, maybe if you eat more than 2 pieces of toast and a sport bean. I started out way too fast and found out it was a loop of 2 rounds of awful hills. Had I slowed down during the first loop, I might have made it. Going back out after the first 13, already in tears and starting to get dizzy and sick, should have been my cue. Even my husband was telling me to stop. But being stubborn, I said no. By mile 20, having started dry heaving on the side twice and almost passing out in the only porta potty on the course, it was the final straw. I had to stop at mile 20. I cried the whole way down. Happy to say, lesson learned. A month later, I lined up in Richmond and properly fueled and properly humbled, I ran another marathon and finished. Well, you know, Karen, that is what it's all about. You know, things can go horribly wrong in the marathon, as we're learning, but you don't give up, you get out there, and you do it again. Because there's nothing wiser than doing something miserable twice. Okay, this next comment comes from Scott Bianchi. Sorry if I don't nail these last names. He says, I ran my first marathon in October of 2014 after only being a runner for 7 months. I trained hard all year. The first 13.1 miles were easy. I was doing great. Mile 14 hit, and suddenly, I felt like I was going to get sick, but I pushed through. At mile 18, I got cramps in both hamstrings. I laid in someone's yard, wondering how I was going to get back to the finish line. But I stretched them out, and I got up, and I just walked the last 8.2 miles. It wasn't what I wanted for a finish time, but I finished, and it did change my life. Andy Keel writes, I collapsed at the finish line of my second marathon, the 2014 Cincinnati Flying Pig. Yes, that is the name of the marathon. I woke up in an ice bath with 108 temperature. I came out of the ice bath at 95 degrees and hypothermic. I spent the next 23 hours in the hospital where I took 13 bags of fluid. The race director was awesome and brought those of us that wound up hospitalized our medals. Those of us, huh, okay. I finished in 3:51. I came back strong in 2015 and ran 343. Can't let a little fever hold you back. No, I guess not. That's rough, man. Andy, that's the most painful horror story we have come across yet. I can handle the barfing in the lane and the person's lawn, maybe even the knee pain, but what you just described is utterly terrifying, and I hope it never happens to you again or anybody listening to this awful, awful podcast episode. Shall we continue? Cynthia Listenby, she says, Chicago Marathon 2014. I found my way to the start line and I used the porta potty. My bag was checked in and I was ready to go. I decided to go to use the restroom one more time just before the race started. That's when I figured out my period started, and of course I had nothing on me. I stuffed myself with this is not fun to read, folks. I stuffed myself with toilet paper and went on to run 26.2. That's my horror story. That is a horrible, horrible story, Cynthia. And I have this visual that I can't get out of my head now. Let's move on. Rachel Arnold. She says, I had a horrible half at the Disney Wine and Dine. Overindulgence the day before, plus running at night, plus torrential nonstop downpour equals a personal worst in sheer misery. But I finished. Well, you know, Rachel, that's the magic of Disney. That's why you pay the big bucks to do the Disney Wine and Dine. So thanks for sharing your story with us. And last, but certainly not least, we have a great story from Adolfo, whose last name is too hard for me to pronounce. He knows who he is, longtime listener. He says, my horror story is from New York, 1983. I was just 18 and thought I could take the world by storm. I already had a 4:11 marathon under my belt, so I thought I knew everything. Really? At 18, you thought that? So I thought I knew everything, and I was going to break 4 hours with my eyes closed. What I didn't know was I had to wait until 11 a.m. to start running, and I was at the starting line since 6:30 in the morning. Temperatures were in the 30s. I was living in Venezuela, so I wasn't used to these extremes, and I did not take anything to eat. It also rained the entire way. Half frozen and walking around mile 20 or so, I saw someone among the crowd with a steaming cup of something. So I approached him, or was it a her? I can't remember. And I asked them for a sip. It was coffee. A block later, I saw a kid with a pretzel. I'm embarrassed to confess. I yanked it from his hands. It was a torture. I finished New York in 4:51. My worst, but at least I finished. And that, folks, is how you party like it's 1983. Thank you, Adolfo, for sending in that entertaining story about an overconfident, young, would-be, sub-4-hour marathoner, horribly underdressed and underfueled for the New York City Marathon. Well, now it's time to share a story of our own. This is not necessarily a horror story, but it is a race recap that we did years ago about the Screaming Pumpkin Marathon in Peoria, Illinois, which I don't even think they have anymore. Angie found this race and decided she wanted to go up there at the last minute. She signed me up for it too, even though I'd only done one marathon previous, and it totally kicked my butt. So we go up there, and this is a marathon that takes place at night around a cemetery. So we're running in the dark, in the cold, on this monotonous hilly loop in a cemetery. The race organization had a lot to be desired, but they did give out a cool medal and jacket. You can no longer find this episode in iTunes or anywhere publicly online. You can find it, though, in the podcast vault in the Academy, for those of you that are members. But I want to play a portion of it here for you, because I thought it'd be very fitting to go along with our Halloween special. So I hope you enjoy hearing us describe running the most bizarre marathon I've done to date, the Screaming Pumpkin Marathon in Peoria, Illinois, a race that was so fun, I never wanted to do it again.
We're up all night to get lucky.
Now we want to recap the Screaming Pumpkin Marathon in Peoria, Illinois. What a great name for a race, huh? Screaming Pumpkin.
It was just fun to say, like tell people what race we were going to be doing.
I enjoyed telling coworkers that you and I pay like $130 each to run around a cemetery for 5 hours in the cold.
In the dark.
They look at me like, okay.
When I was looking for an October marathon to run, it was kind of hard to find something that fit into our schedule for one thing. Mm-hmm. And then I knew that I also wanted something just a little bit unique.
And close by.
So, you know, when we found the Screaming Pumpkin Marathon at the end of October, it really fit the bill on all those counts. And I know it's definitely one that we'll probably both remember for a long time.
So tell them what the ground rules were for this race. It was not a normal marathon.
No, it wasn't. This was a prediction marathon, and the goal was to finish as close to midnight as possible. So your starting time depended on your projected finishing time. There were also no GPS devices or watches allowed on the course, and cell phones were for emergency use only. And if they caught you having a watch or, you know, looking at your phone, then supposedly a 15-minute time penalty would be added to your time.
Right.
I don't realize how much I am time-driven when I run, mm-hmm. but just not even being able to glance at your wrist and figure out how far you've gone and, you know, how much time you've been out there, what time it is, it really kind of throws off your sense of distance and then adding the factor of the dark in there, too. It's really hard to judge how long you've been out there, how far you've gone, things like that when it's dark.
Yes, and there's no mile markers.
Exactly.
So if you finish before midnight, you get a tiara. And if you finished after midnight, you got a pumpkin.
That's right.
Kind of the Cinderella thing, I guess. Angie and I finished at, what was it, like 12:30?
Yes.
They were closing down the course. I really slowed her down. We ran together. What did we finish in, like 5 hours and 8 minutes?
5 hours and 7 minutes, yeah.
Probably not your fastest marathon.
No, it was not.
And it was my second marathon that I've ever done. My first one was last year in St. Louis, so I kind of wasn't ready, and I figured, well, I'd run probably the first half of it and then kind of run, walk.
I think you only got up to a 16-mile long run in your training, so
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you did really well, you know, just with the amount of training that you had and the challenge of the course and everything, too. It was actually held in the Springfield Cemetery in Peoria, which is one of the oldest and largest in the country. Apparently, there are 78,000 people buried there, and the entire cemetery is around 230 acres. So the course was on the roads through the cemetery. It was a 6.55 mile loop, and it was advertised as one of the hilliest and darkest courses in the country, which I would say it fit the bill pretty well.
Yeah, you're right. It was hilly, it was dark, and there were stretches where we didn't see any other people. And they had the course really well marked with these, what were they, like glow sticks inside plastic bags.
Mm-hmm.
And both sides of the road were lined with them. But the thing about it was the road would kind of like branch off and would go to the right and the left. And there were several places where it would tee off like that. And I would have been totally lost and confused if this wasn't for this one piece of information that you had, that you got from reading the website, which always goes to show you, like, read over the website and get as much knowledge as you can about the course beforehand. Because this one critical piece of information kept us from wandering around aimlessly in the cemetery. So go ahead and tell them what that piece of information was.
Well, it said that if you have the choice of a turn, always make a right turn.
Yes.
And there were times in the course where the road had two-way traffic. And so, like Trevor said, although it was well marked, it wasn't like, you know, showing you exactly where to go.
There's no arrow, there's no sign, there's no race volunteers like saying that way.
Exactly. You just kind of had to, you know. And so the first time around the loop, we were guessing, you know, kind of second guessing ourselves. Have we come mm-hmm. this way? But we just kind of kept making right turns and it ended up getting us back to the starting line again. And then the second time and the subsequent times, we were more comfortable with the course. But yeah, I would have been totally turned around if I hadn't remembered reading that, because as Trevor knows, I'm notoriously bad with directions. And in the dark, it just totally throws, you know, even your memory of where you've been off as well. So
what did you think about the overall vibe that the race had?
I think it was definitely a fun vibe. I think most people were running it more for fun, kind of mm-hmm. like we were. They weren't trying to win the race or qualify for Boston or whatever. It was more of a laid back, you know, let's do this for the experience type of thing.
It wasn't even a qualifier anyway.
I don't think so. I don't really see how it could have been. And there were many people in costumes. In fact, for a lot of the relay participants, the members of the teams would often dress in coordinating costumes.
Right.
And so we saw some pretty unique and extravagant costumes out there. It was kind of fun.
It looked like there was this dad and his son, and they were dressed up as Batman and Robin. And it looks like they were running the marathon. This kid was probably like 10 years old.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
It was kind of hard to know who was doing what since it was a loop, you know, and you kind of would see people, so you weren't sure if they were doing the relay or if they were doing the full thing. And there was also a 10K, so it was kind of a unique event.
And we didn't dress up in costumes. Angie had her Marathon Maniac shirt, which is kind of ghoulish already, so we figured that'd be good. And I had a, and I had a yellow long sleeve shirt, so we were kind of the running yellow couple.
I'm scary enough as it is when I'm running. So.
I don't agree with that. I don't think you're scary when you run.
Thank you. One mistake we made was that we didn't arrive at the race very early. They were offering pre-race check-in and, you know, pick up your gear and get your race number and everything. And so we figured a small race, it shouldn't take us much time. And we showed up and there was this long line after we finally figured out which line to get in. And the line just didn't move.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people are starting to murmur and get frustrated. And finally we find out after at least a half an hour that they're trying to check people in on these computers. And the computers were down or going offline.
Yes, it made me long for the organization of the rock and roll marathons where they have a big box with files in it. Your name is written on a file. You tell them your name. They pull out your packet and they give it to you.
Yes.
I mean, computers are great, but man, when they're not working right, all hell breaks loose.
And that's what happened. Plus, they had this music, this Halloween-themed music over the loudspeakers, which was very, very loud.
Yes.
And they had this one song on repeat. And we were in this line for over an hour, and this song kept playing and playing.
And I'll actually play you the song. It's the Dracula theme. Here's what it sounds like. Anyway, the song is like 9 minutes long. As Angie said, it was just on loop, and it kept repeating over and over, and probably for like 30 minutes, don't you think? And
there, at least.
There's actually a live band there, and you could see all the band members, and once in a while, you know, they do a little rim shot on the drums. I'm like, let these guys play. The race directors and the organizers were all busy, you know, scurrying about doing other things, and no one bothered to go by and reset the playlist. And we're like looking around at other people in line, and they look just as unnerved as we feel, and there's just murder in people's eyes, you know. When it finally ended, like an AC/DC song came on. I don't think I've ever been so happy to hear an AC/DC song.
Like finally relief, sort of.
Yes, heavy metal. So as we're in this line, we're looking at our watches and we're like, man, you know, we're cutting really close to our starting time because we were going to get our packet and then, you know, have like an hour before we were going to start. We were going to go get a coffee, had all these plans. Well, even the best laid plans can fail epically.
Apparently ours weren't laid too well.
So we're standing in line. There's this lady who is probably a volunteer, and she's a real sweet lady, and I just really felt bad because I'm sure everybody is, like, really hating on her, and she can't help it. You know, the computers are crashing. She has her own laptop out and is trying to register runners through it, but it's taking, like, 15 or 20 minutes per person. I don't know if she has an air card or something, and her computer's really slow, and then she just disappears.
I would have, too, much sooner.
And this guy comes and he's like, all right, everybody, get in two lines. Let's organize two lines. And I'm like, finally, okay, great. This is some organization here. Some leadership has shown up. So we get into two lines and then neither line goes anywhere. So we keep waiting and waiting and the line keeps getting longer. Like there's probably 100 people or more. And it just keeps growing. And then finally, like the two lines merged into one line and we're back how we were. No one is saying anything. There's no, you know, there's no race organizers around. Finally, this lady comes back who's supposed to be getting us registered and checked in, and she just has a legal pad. She says, here, write your name down, take a bib, write the number down, just we'll get it all figured out, and please try to write legibly. You know, and they did figure it out because our results are posted online, so they I guess the system worked finally, but I felt really bad. You know, I can't imagine organizing a race like that anyway. And there's so many moving parts. And then something like that happens, you know, computers crash, just something unforeseen. And man, you talk about stressful. I'm glad other people do it.
Yes.
Not us.
Exactly. And, you know, you don't really appreciate it necessarily when it all goes smoothly. But when mm-hmm. it doesn't go smoothly, then, you know, people really start to
yeah.
to get grouchy and everything.
There's this guy that walks up to the front of the line after we had waited there for about 45 minutes. We were near the front. And the guy's like, is this the line for the packet pickup? I'm like, yep. He's like, what if you're already registered? Well, this is still the line. We're already registered, too. We're just trying to get our packets. He's like, well, what if I got to start in 10 minutes? It's like, I know, we got to start too really soon. He's like, all right. So then he disappears. And then he like cuts in the front. He just pushes his way to the front of the table. And these poor ladies, these volunteers are up there. And they don't tell him to go to the back. They're like, you know, working with the guy. And meanwhile, like all the runners around us are calling this guy names that will not be repeated on this podcast.
And he looks back and he's like, well, I'm from Kansas.
Yeah, I had to drive a long ways. One guy's like, I don't care where you're from. And that was the hardest part of the race.
Yeah, it was.
Like staying alive. It was like a part of the endurance challenge.
When you don't feel like you're in action and you're just, you know, stuck in this holding zone that you have no idea when you're going to get out of it, it was frustrating. We got up to the front and there was some ladies there who were doing the relay.
Mm-hmm.
And she had been standing there for at least a couple hours, and people kept budging in front of her, and she wasn't assertive enough
yeah.
to just get in there and say, hey, I've been waiting, you know, 2 hours. I need to get...
It was really weird. This lady was in tears, and people just kept budging right in front of her, and yeah, she wasn't like, hey, it's my turn. And the volunteer lady who was, like, getting everybody's shirts and packets and stuff didn't speak good English. And this lady could not communicate with her. And people kept, like, just shouting out their sizes, like their T-shirt sizes to this woman. People that are standing halfway in the line are shouting out their sizes. And she's, like, trying to throw shirts to people. And there's other volunteers who were, like, rummaging through piles of shirts. It's like all of the shirts had become jumbled up into one pile. And they're, like, rummaging through looking for the people's right sizes. People that pre-registered were not getting the right sizes because people who came that same day and paid right then and there at the race were taking up all the shirts that had been ordered. This lady's like, I've been standing here for 2 hours. She says, I just need 6 medium shirts. Is that so much to ask? And she's like in tears. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. Here, go ahead. And I made sure that, you know, they were helped her before they helped me. And I'm reaching and I'm getting like glow sticks and the swag bag and everything for her.
In defense, the swag was really, really good. I mean, that was kind of one of the things the race was known for. Mm-hmm. And each participant got a long sleeve tech shirt and a jacket in this neon orange, nice reflective jacket and a beanie. And then finishers got a nice medal. And those who did the marathon got a belt buckle. And of course, then, you know, depending whether you finished before or after midnight, depended whether you got the tiara and wand or the pumpkin.
Yeah.
So, you know, once we got our swag and everything, it was like, wow, this is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, the jackets are nice. Of course, you pay for it with the registration.
Well, I think those jackets are fairly expensive, so...
Maybe buying them such a great quantity gets the price down mm-hmm. for every person.
But they definitely, you know, had quality stuff, so... That was one really nice thing, because sometimes smaller marathons, you know, they don't put as much into the swag. You know, you may just get kind of a random cotton T-shirt. It just kind of depends. And mm-hmm. so that was definitely something that they excelled at.
Yes.
And once we got out on the course, like you said, it was fun, you know, especially the first loop. It was like figuring out where we needed to go. And so you always have a lot of excitement and adrenaline. And, you know, the second loop was good. The third loop, you were starting to slow down, and I was starting to get cold.
Yes.
And all the walk breaks that you wanted to take, I was losing all my body heat. So I was like, oh, we've either got to start running again, or I'm going to freeze here in place.
I know. It wasn't feeling better to take walk breaks anyway.
No, it wasn't.
Just in my mind, just your mind tells you that it will be better if you walk.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't feel any better physiologically. Yeah. Well, thankfully, I was able to run back to the car on one of the loops and grab your jacket and put some fresh batteries in my headlamp.
Yes, I don't think I would have survived the last lap with you if I hadn't had that jacket.
She'd have been like, see ya, wouldn't want to be ya.
I'd be like, I'm going to be a popsicle by the time this is over.
Boy, after the second lap, I'm like, oh man, we got to do two more. Oh, and the third lap, and then I'm thinking, at least there's only one more. And you think to yourself, it's only 6.5 miles. I do that on a smaller training run, so how many times have I done that? You know, dozens and dozens of times. So just do it one more time.
It does help to break the race up, even if it's really not done for you, and kind of run each part and not think about every single mile in the future. Just kind of attack a section at a time so that you don't get overwhelmed and discouraged, you know, there in the middle of it. So we were really glad that we had done the course together because of, you know, it's pretty lonely out there. Sometimes not seeing any other runners and it being in the dark and everything, and just kind of helped to talk to each other and pass the time. But it was really neat. I'd never run that far at night before in the dark. And so it was just a whole new feeling. You know, the moon came out, you could see stars. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was really enjoyable other than me being cold and a few minor details like that. It was a lot of fun.
So if we can go over some takeaways from this marathon, what are some things that we could share, like lessons learned?
Well, I think it's important that you are prepared with the right gear. The race website recommended that you have a headlamp or some kind of light. I was really glad that we did and were prepared with that. It's also important to take the weather into consideration. And sometimes it can be hard to know how to dress because, you know, you may start out and be cold, but then you warm up. But at a night race, you know, you may start warm and then get cold later. So, you know, dress in layers, maybe have a jacket that you can take on and off and tie around your waist. You know, have a thin pair of gloves to tuck in your pocket.
Yeah, we had to stop at the dollar store and buy a pair of gloves because we forgot ours.
Yeah, before the race. And so it's important to be prepared because if you're having to worry about things like being cold, it can really add more discomfort to a marathon than you need to be having. So, and also, you know, make sure that you read carefully all the details on the race website. Read about the course. So if you know that it may not be well marked and when to turn and what direction and all those kind of things, you know, even though I've done lots of marathons, you know, it doesn't mean that I need to just show up unprepared.
Right.
And I can't always say that I'm perfectly prepared. But I think each race that a person does helps them gain more perspective and prepares them for the future. You know, I'm sure there'll be things that I'll take away from that marathon and be able to apply in the future and everything too. And we also kind of were talking about how it wasn't the best race for like a first-time marathoner.
Yes.
Just because of the lack of support and organization on the course. And, you know, there weren't really any spectators. And it was kind of lonely being out there. I really felt sorry for some of the people who were running it alone, as a matter of fact, just because, you know, you're really in the dark, alone, out there. It would have been just kind of an isolating feeling.
I was thinking about that, too. Like, would I even have the willpower to do this by myself? Like, what am I doing this for?
I noticed there were a lot of people who were wearing Marathon Maniac shirts, too, so I think after you've done a lot of marathons, you know, sometimes you look at more unique ones for the experience of it.
Right.
Plus the fact that it was on a Friday night, I'm sure some people would probably be doing maybe a Sunday marathon as well to kind of do back-to-back races. So that was probably a factor. Like Trevor said, we finished after midnight, and by the time we were kind of finishing up, they were starting to pack up certain things and put them away, and there wasn't really the greatest spread of food at the finishing line. So we fortunately had our recovery drink with us and were able to have that. And then we had to drive an hour back to the hotel that we were staying at. So, of course, being tired and finally getting warm in the car, it was a little bit difficult to... Well, it was difficult for me to stay awake, and I wasn't even driving.
It was hard for me to stay awake because another thing is we had skipped dinner.
Yes.
We didn't want to run like on a full bloated stomach. We had a good lunch, but nothing too heavy or greasy. And then after the race, there was some chili. My stomach wasn't really prepared to eat anything. So normally I would go for it, but...
By the time we got back to the hotel room, we were both so exhausted. We didn't even shower. We just went right to bed.
Yeah.
I think that's the first time I haven't gotten a shower within at least a few, you know, a couple hours.
But it ended up being a fun weekend because we brought our kids, and Angie's mom went with us to watch the kids while we raced, and we stayed at a very nice Drury Hotel in Springfield, Illinois, and we were able to go to the Abraham Lincoln House in Springfield. He served in the Congress before becoming president and had a law practice there. It ended up being a fun weekend for everyone.
Yes, it was. It was good.
Okay, folks, so there you have it. Maybe it wasn't so bad. Maybe I did have fun at the Screaming Pumpkin Marathon. I do know one thing. They gave us a really cool pumpkin orange Kinvara Saucony jacket that I have worn every winter since. It's a great jacket to run in. It's not that often you get a jacket at a marathon. So I guess the lesson here is expect the unexpected. If it can go wrong, it might go wrong. But just be willing to laugh and not take yourself so seriously. Of course, we do believe that with good training, you can mitigate against a lot of things that could go wrong, especially if you get your fueling nailed down and your running form and, you know, the proper balance in training and recovery, tapering, cross-training, rest, core work, a lot of stuff that we teach and advocate here at MTA. But even with the best training possible, you just never know what the weather can throw at you, what the course can throw at you, what your stomach can throw at you. Just remember, no matter where you're starting at on this journey, there's probably somebody who has it worse, right? And another great thing to keep in mind is, no matter how tough your race is, there's probably a nastier race with a more challenging course and worse weather happening somewhere. So it kind of puts it all in perspective. At least that's what I try to keep in mind when I'm out there. Thanks again to everyone who shared at the top of the show the marathon horror stories that I read from our fellow runners and listeners to this podcast. We appreciate all you folks. Hopefully you've had a nice, smooth year as far as marathon training goes. And if not, well, it makes for a good story, right? And by the way, if you want to get all of our back episodes, we've done almost 200 podcast episodes now. We only keep 50 at a time available online, but if you want to get all the back episodes, you can find that in the Academy. And we're also going to be doing a special release of Volume 2, which is our second set of 50. So from episode 50 to episode 100, and this will cover many of our best race recaps, a lot of great guests and topics that we dove into between 2012 to 2014. We saw a lot of impact and life change just from those podcast episodes when they went out back in the day. Just to get those episodes and go through, I bet you would learn a lot and have a lot of great laughs. So please be watching for our special sale we're going to be having on the MTA Podcast Volume 2 coming at you. Until next time, keep running. Happy Halloween. Cheers, everyone, and we'll catch you on the flip side.